This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. It's never been more important to understand your customers, what they value, and creating moments for them that matter. But where does the customer experience begin? Does it ever end? And how do you wrap your arms around creating a consistent customer journey and experience that will keep them loyal? Your customers are loyal until they're not. That's a quote from Jeannie Walters, who joins me today. Welcome again to everyone listening to Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. Jeannie is the founder and CEO of Experience Investigators, and she's one of the leading authorities and speakers on all things customer experience. As you'll hear today, she's very passionate about demystifying the process for improving customer experience. Jeannie, I'm really glad that you're able to join me today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Will. I'm thrilled to be talking with you today.
So, Jeannie, it's really easy to say that we put the customer first, right? Every company will claim that. It's on their websites, it's on their social media channels, on signage in their offices and all that. But what does putting the customer first actually look like and mean?
That's a great place to start, because a lot of times when I speak about customer experience, or when I speak about really making sure that you're approaching it in the right way, people come up to me and they say, I get it. I always think of the customer. I just wish everybody else in my organization did. And what that tells me is there's not real business thought to it. And that is what happens a lot. So sometimes I ask people, what is your goal with a great customer experience? And they say, we want to be the best. I say, that's great. What does that mean? And they go, we're going to have a seamless, effortless experience. And I say, that's fantastic. How are you doing that? And they say, we're putting the customer in the center of everything I do. And I say, how do you do that? And they draw a circle. And then they draw a little circle and they say, here's the customer. And I'm like, but that's not really doing it. So I'm very passionate about being intentional and proactive about customer experience, because we have to stop treating it like it's something magical. We have to treat it like it's something to manage.
I can relate, because we talk a lot about brand, for example. As a marketing person, I'm very passionate about branding. It's very much in alignment with what you're just saying, is it can be this great abstract thing that everybody gets behind. But when you start pulling back the layers and say, okay, specifically, how are you driving this forward? People get really quiet really fast, don't they?
Yeah. And I think that part of that is because we weren't trained this way as business people, right? We're trained to think about marketing, sales, and then operations. And so we stop talking about the customer after we get the sale. And we also are always looking inside the organization. And so it's really easy to say, just think about the customer's perspective or walk in their shoes. But if you don't have the right formula for how to really execute on that and how to make sure that everybody in the organization understands what we mean, then it becomes a lot of talk, frankly. And I think that's the thing that we still have a long way to go.
When I first heard you speak at the ISA annual business retreat, you talked really eloquently about the customer journey mapping. And I thought that was a great articulation that I'd love to talk about and sort of help crystallize for people listening, because as you were alluding to before, people can mistake the customer experience in a lot of different ways. They can view it from their own lens. Some people view the customer experience as everything up to the initial sale. Others view the customer experience as just customer service, sort of post sale. But there's a lot of different phases. Can you talk about all of those?
Sure. Yeah. And I want to back up just a little bit, because customer journey mapping is a tool in the toolkit. But when we're looking at really understanding customer experience, I like to say that we have to start with what we call the experience commitments, and making sure it's a mindset, it's a strategy, and it's a discipline. And what I love about the exercise, the effort around journey mapping, is you can use it to kick off a mindset. You can use it to define your strategy. You can use it as a constant tool in your toolkit around business discipline to make sure that everyday efforts are really delivering on those goals that you have. And so when we talk about journey mapping, I was asked to do another workshop in a few months at another association. And I saw somebody who was going to that event, and I said, oh, I'm doing something around customer journey mapping. And she said, oh, I've got that covered, because I've worked on my sales journey and I've worked on my after event journey. so I'm covered. And I was like, but even the way she talked about it told me that she didn't really have it covered. Because when we talk about our own process inside the organization, we aren't really thinking about what's happening with and to the customer. And customer journey mapping is about flipping the script. So instead of sometimes what I call journey mapping by org chart, where we say the marketing team does this and sales team does this and customer success does this, we flip the script. And to your point, we always start with awareness. Like, how do they even become aware of your brand? And I'm a big believer in I statements. So using the words that a customer would use. So customers don't really talk about awareness, right? They don't say, I need to be aware. What that looks like is figuring out how does that actually happen and what is the question and what happens when they see a brand or when they hear about a brand and they start thinking, huh, that sounds interesting, or I wonder if I'll need this at some point. And then they go into consideration where they become a little more serious about that question, about is this for me? And then they go into selection. And selection is where you get into things like comparison shopping. This is when they have a pretty clear idea of what they want out of it, and they're starting to kick the tires. They're starting to see, is this really for me? And these are just the basics, but every organization can have their own phases of the journey, as long as they're not your phases, as long as they're the customer's phases.
The customer shouldn't fit into your nice, neat org chart or flow chart or whatever it might be, because that's just not how they view the world.
That's right. That's right. And so sometimes we'll see a journey map and people go, okay, well, then they buy. And I'll say, especially in B2B, I'll say, what does that mean? How does that work? And they go, oh, we've got to go through this whole procurement process and we have to go through all of these proof of concept ideas. And so they talk about it as if it's this one moment, but really it's a whole journey within purchase. So you want to break that out and say, what is the customer dealing with? They're dealing with requests. They're dealing with trying to build trust, right? Like they're trying to figure out, is this really worth it? All of those things. And you want to identify under each phase, what is the customer thinking, feeling, and doing, as well as what are those emotional points? What are the high points and low points? Where do we build trust? Where do we erode trust? And then after purchase, there's a whole part of the journey. They are now your customer. So what does that look like? How can you move them from just satisfaction, which is like, yeah, you delivered exactly what you said you would, big whoop, to loyalty, and then ultimately to advocacy? And then we also have to think throughout the journey, at any single point, they can leave us. And we can't forget about that, because I think sometimes with these diagrams that we use as business people, we literally envision a customer marching through our process instead of really breaking it down and understanding their motivations, their feelings. And one of the big feelings that we have to think about is how can we reassure them? Because they're going to doubt along the journey. And we have to just accept that and work with it.
And one of the examples of the flowchart thing that you were just alluding to that we'll talk about in a little bit is the classic sales funnel, right? And how we really would love for the customer to fall nice and neatly through each of our phases of the sales funnel, but that just doesn't exist. The continuum that you described from awareness, consideration, selection, purchase, et cetera, there's never like a nice, neat handoff from one group to the next, to your point about, again, flipping the script. So It's not about your org chart, but what are some common specific points where cracks tend to happen In the handoffs and bad moments can happen along the way?
One thing I always like to start with is whenever we start a discussion with any team and we say, what's happening with the customer journey? What's working? What's not? There's always something that the whole team goes, oh man, that's terrible. We know we have to fix that. We've been talking about that forever. We know customers hate it. Some of this is just what you already know. And so kind of embrace that part of it and say, we need to fix those moments, whatever those are. And then as far as the common points, think about the handoffs in your organization. So if you are making a promise in your marketing materials and then your salespeople say, we can't really deliver on that, so we're not going to include that as part of the sale. And then they continue on and they're calling customer service because the promise that the salesperson made or that the sales materials made, they're not feeling that as a customer. When we organize things solely by org chart or solely by our processes, we miss opportunities to really deliver on the promise that we made for customers. And I think that's where those breaks happen. We also sometimes, because we're on the inside and we see things a lot, we'll say, oh, we'll get to that someday. We know that our mobile app isn't working the way it should. We get complaints about it. I know we're going to get to that someday. And I would say that's the type of thing you need to start asking yourself, how do we prioritize along the journey? And it should be about the customer, which will lead to better business results for you.
What are the elite brands doing around customer experience that others just simply are not? One of the things I remember you talking about, and maybe you're going to allude to it here, is about the number of positive experiences that it takes to overcome a negative one and that sort of difference between elite brands and others.
This is one of my favorite things to think about, because when I talk about being proactive and intentional about customer experience, I think sometimes people think that means we're planning all the big, huge moments, the kind of PR moments that people talk about. And I think about that differently, because in any relationship we have, it takes 12 positive experiences to overcome one negative one. And so when you think about that, that's really about trust. That's about, if you let me down once, but if we have a solid relationship where you've shown up for me 12 other times, we're going to overcome that one hiccup, no problem. But if it's the reverse of that, that's not a relationship. That's something that feels bad for one party. So I think the one thing to remember is that there will be negative moments. So the elite brands actually provide 22 positive moments for every one negative one. And what that tells you is they're investing in those small moments that are usually neglected. And a lot of the things that we do as business people, we're constantly overwhelmed, right? We don't have enough time. We have too many things to do. But what that means is we let things become what I call meh moments, right? Like, we don't celebrate when things go well with the customer. We don't really acknowledge or try to show empathy when we should, when things do go wrong. All of those things add up and it chips away at the trust we have in any relationship. Even the ones that are considered laggards in customer experience have a positive ratio of 3 positive to every one, but that's still not enough. So being proactive and intentional means looking for moments where you can turn up the volume a little bit on the positivity, because if you have more of those, you are more likely to overcome those negative moments that will happen with your customers, because you'll have enough trust in that emotional bank.
And even something just like showing empathy, that can be one of those moments, right? Because if you're being empathetic and sort of owning where you messed up or made the mistake or let the customer down, that counts for something. And companies forget that even just doing that and that sort of humanity and empathy matters a lot, right?
It matters so much. In fact, the part that really fascinates me is if you look at healthcare and patient experience, patients actually have better health outcomes if they are shown more empathy. Think about that for a second. Like, we treat medicine like it's science, but humans are really complex and we need to be shown empathy. We need to be seen and recognized and heard. And there is a lot out there that basically says, just solve the problem, like move on, all those things. But if we can show that empathy, if we can help somebody feel really recognized in the moment, they will remember that. And sometimes overcoming something like that actually leads to more loyalty when it's handled well. Service recovery can actually lead to more loyalty as long as it's done well. So those negative moments are actually opportunities when they're handled well to provide even more loyalty for your customers.
A couple of things you keep hitting on, which is important here, is the human element, the emotional element of whether it's buying or their experience with the brand up front in more of the awareness stages, or just, again, buying is emotional. When I heard you speak, you talked about how creating a better customer experience is creating a better experience for humans. And it seems like that idea can get easily lost today. So much of customer experience tries to be, I don't want to say shortcut, but you know, automated, let's use AI, let's avoid human interaction instead of actually fostering those relationships that matter. And those things might make things easier for us, but do they make it easier for customers? And are there things that companies are doing wrong in maybe trying to swing the pendulum too far in automating customer experience?
I have a lot of optimism about this, actually. And to go back to what you were saying about making a better world, that's all related to the mission that we live at my company, which is to create fewer ruined days for customers. And the reason that's our mission is because I really do believe if we can help each other, if we can help somebody achieve a goal faster and more conveniently, if we can make them feel just a little happier in a day by smiling, all of those things matter and they add up. And when we have the opposite of that, that negativity then goes out to the world, right? So I might have a bad experience with my barista and then take that to the dry cleaners and then take that home to my family. And so when we are looking at this, that's really how we're thinking about it. And so when we're talking about automation and tools like that, this is where I think it's really important to think of customer experience as a mindset and a strategy. And the way we recommend doing that is you have a customer experience mission statement. So what is most important? How do we show up for our customers? Because sometimes we have to make trade-offs. We can't promise to be the fastest and the most accurate all the time. Those two things are not always going to align. So we have to decide upfront, what are we asking our people to do? And then as we develop a strategy around customer experience to back up that mission, we say, okay, what is important to our organization? What's important to our leaders? What's important to our customers? And how do we prioritize to make sure we're getting those outcomes? Sometimes automation is a tool in that. And the way that I like to think about this is we have seen and customers have told us that they're okay with automation with a few rules. One is you tell me that I'm talking to a robot, right? You don't act like it's a person and then halfway through have, you know, them say the same thing because it's a robot. You are transparent. The other thing is that if it's something that can be handled through automation, customers actually really appreciate that. If I need to call for my bank account, I don't want to sit on hold for my balance. I just want to get that information. So there are lots of opportunities. And then just recently, with how natural language processing and machine learning and AI is coming along, we're getting some really interesting opportunities. Just recently, there was some research done where they asked doctors to reply to patient questions with advice, and they asked AI to do the same thing. And patients actually felt like AI was giving them a better answer because it was giving them a longer answer with more resources and actually showing empathy. And the doctors are so, you know, they've got 30 seconds to answer something. They're going to give you just the facts. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to look at how can we best use these tools? Because then that allows us to actually save the empathy and those really nuanced situations for the humans who need to deliver them. Because empathy is a finite resource. We don't have the same amount in the beginning of the day as we do at the end. And so if we can leverage that for the most complicated, the hardest, the most emotional, whatever it is, with the actual people, then that's really living up to that mission and living up to that strategy in powerful ways.
Let's talk about customer experience more specifically, given the theme of this podcast, in the context of sales and revenue growth, because you have a lot to say there. And for starters, I know you say that you're selling to people, not to businesses, right? And so that's an important context to always keep in mind. What's the sort of business case or sales case for being really proactive about customer experience strategy? And why is it so essential to your sales strategy?
Yeah, I think there's a myth out there that it's a cost center, right? Investing in customer experience is a cost center. Customer service is just an expense. And when you think of it that way, you can see why people would say, we just need to invest in sales. Let's just make sure sales is getting what they need because they're going to bring in the bucks. But if we are only acquiring and not looking at things like churn, like which of those customers are walking out the door and why, how long and how well are we retaining customers? What's our referral rate? All of those things actually make sales jobs easier. So what I always recommend to CX leaders is go talk to your sales leaders, get them on board, because if you work together, amazing things happen. We can reduce the cost of service. If people are happier, they're not going to call service. They're not going to have those issues. They're not going to ask for refunds, all of those things. With salespeople in particular, I love when they are aware of things like customer churn rate and referral rate. They will get really invested in the customer experience because referrals are actually more likely to close, more likely to spend money faster, all of those things. Those are amazing, right? We all want referrals. So when the CX leader and the sales leaders work together, it really is like a powerhouse combo. Because the other part of that is that sales hears directly from customers all the time or potential customers. And they can say, what I'm hearing is that people have heard from other customers that this part of the journey is really cumbersome or we don't deliver on this. So that CX leader then can either collect more feedback from current customers to make a case, or they can just, you know, go to that team and say, hey, this is what we're hearing. This is interrupting the customer journey in a way that is negative. We need to fix this. And then again, continue that dialogue with those sales leaders and say, hey, we're working on this. Here's what you can say for the future. Here's what you can say to people in the pipeline now about what's happening. So it's really about having that dialogue and understanding that sales and awareness and all of that is part of the journey. And so we have to treat it like it's part of the overall journey and that we're all living up to that mission, because that's when things really happen for both the customer and the organization. But I think that we have to really start talking about the return on investment of a seamless customer journey, of investing in the customer experience.
We see that all the time as a company, that companies talk a lot about investing in sales training, right? But then they don't have the money to spend as much on customer service training because it's viewed through an entirely different lens. And I think also what you were articulating before is a great example of where there is no nice, neat handoff between sales and customer service. Like you said, the idea that sales, of course, is one of the best sources of having your company's ear to the ground and understanding what's going on and what pain points and what they might be hoping for in the future that they can help inform. And then conversely, the customer service teams are so often the source of, you talk about getting repeat business and getting referrals. Sometimes that's generated by the salesperson relationship. Very often it's generated after the sale, and it's more that customer service relationship that drives that.
Well, or customer success or just account management or whatever. But going back to remembering that we're talking about people and not businesses, one of the things I often say is, like, when we're in B2B, those are very personal relationships. And we sometimes act like they're not. But if I am working with an account manager for 6 months to 3 years, I know them. I know, you know, what their hobbies are. I know their kids. They know me. And we can't treat that like it's not a real relationship. That's where we, I think, get into trouble sometimes with B2B. We act like the client is actually the faceless corporate logo. But that's not true. That's not true. And so that's what I love about really thinking proactively about the journey. We can start thinking about things like, how can we make that handoff better for the customer, which actually makes it better for the salesperson and for the account manager or for the client success person or whoever. And I think that's another angle, especially in today's marketplace, that is really important. When we do this well, we actually make employees' lives better. We make the employee experience better. And not only that, but then you become a workplace of choice. You get better candidate referrals. People stay longer, all of those things. So everything goes hand in hand here, but we have to think about it differently. We can't talk about B2B like it's faceless, and we can't talk about the journey as if it's based on our org chart, because it's not. It's based on what customers want.
And to echo something you just said, that idea of investing in the employee experience, one of the recent podcast guests I had was all about that. If you want to create a great customer experience, create a great employee experience. I think you just echoed that. Absolutely. You had talked earlier about how we want customers to fit into our flow charts and spreadsheets and things like that. So let's talk about the traditional, if not extremely outdated, nice, neat sales funnel. How are customers experiencing the sales cycle differently than what salespeople would like to pigeonhole them into?
Yeah, well, a couple things. One is, if we're not thinking about the customer and their perspective, a couple things are bound to happen. One is, we treat them like they're a category, even when they're not. And what I mean by that is, let's say we have a prospect category, right? And they get certain emails and they get certain offers and we follow up a certain way. Some of those prospects might even go through up until the very end of the sales process. Sometimes they actually become a customer and then they drop off. But when they drop off, we treat them like they're a prospect again, like we never had a relationship with them. So they get these emails that feel very impersonal. They've had a relationship and suddenly they get something saying, we're offering new customers XYZ, or you should try this thing that you've already tried, right? So that's one area where I think if we're not thinking proactively about this, we actually dehumanize the customer without knowing that we're doing that because we're forcing them into our process. The other thing that happens is we work so hard on the sales relationships. We work so hard on defining the organization, the brand, the company through that experience that then there's this very cold handoff sometimes. And the person thinks, Will's my guy, right? Like, I'm going to call Will if I have questions. And I'm told you can't call Will anymore, customer, because Will is in sales and you need to now talk to Frank, who's over in client success. And if that handoff is not handled in a warm, human way, then the customer will feel dropped off a cliff and feel like, you know what, Frank might be great, but I know Will and I trust Will because Will worked really hard on that. So I think that's a huge area to consider for sales. And the other thing I'll say is that I think when we are looking at the customer journey, we are not always thinking about their real lives. And so I'm a big proponent of thinking about, okay, when we say they're calling customer service, for instance, sometimes we map that out and we say, like, call, they get an answer, they do this. No, no, we need to start before that. We need to think about what happened and how bad did it get where they are willing to call customer service? Because people have reported that they would rather go to the dentist than call customer service sometimes. So if somebody's at that phase, what is happening? And what does it mean for their real life? Because nobody wakes up in the morning and says, oh, good, I get to call about a problem today. That's fantastic. So we really need to think about what's actually happening in that moment. It's not really our process. This is where I get back to the diagrams and stuff. We act like even a customer journey map, we act like they're marching through that. But really, they're living their lives and they're fitting us in. And that's what we have to kind of embrace as organizations that deliver services or products. We are fitting into their lives. So what does their life actually look like? And how can we make it easier to fit into their life? I like to say, like, when we're talking about customer experiences, sometimes it's easy to think of the glamorous ones, right? Or the ones that we all know really well, Disney and Zappos and all those that are so good at it. But you know what? When you're paying a parking ticket, you're also having a customer experience. Somebody might walk away and even forget that they paid that parking ticket if it went well. If it didn't go well, they're going to be so angry, not just at that parking ticket experience, but that bleeds out into who's running this town, right? It starts that whole ruined day thing. And so I think we need to really be proactive about thinking about what are they really experiencing in their lives. It's not about us at all, frankly.
And that's where, you know, like paying the parking ticket, the customer experience is affected by things like operations and finance and even just the process maybe of how they're invoiced, right? It creates again, going back to the brand thing, it creates a brand impression, customer experience impression that can really matter. I think so many companies, they will spend time and effort and money on the things that will put out fires, but they're not putting the same effort into fire prevention.
Absolutely. And that's why I keep talking about being proactive. Your customers, no matter your industry, are getting their expectations from the rest of their lives. And that means that if you are not at the Amazon level of technology, if you are not able to personalize the experience and show them exactly what to expect, like an Uber app or something like that, they are expecting that. And sometimes people say, nobody in my industry does that. And I'll say, cool, somebody's going to. And they will be the disruptor. The disruptors of the last decade have all been experience-based. And so there is somebody right now trying to disrupt your industry. And if it's not you, somebody else is in the wings doing it.
Another quote I wrote down from you is, you're not just competing with others, you're competing against apathy, which I really like and something I agree with completely, because so very often we see that a salesperson's, their biggest competitor is not another company or competing product, it's inertia or the status quo. Customer experience then layers on really heavily to that, right? How does that idea show up in the sales process?
Whew. Yeah, that's a big one, right? And I think that when we talk about apathy, it's on two sides of the coin, because there's apathy that happens with prospects, customers, those who are kind of in that decision-making process. They become paralyzed sometimes because they don't necessarily have the influence or the decision-making skills or whatever, but also because, to your point, status quo doesn't hurt. It's just the status quo. And I think that goes to what I said earlier about reassurance, right? Like, we need to reassure people at every step of the journey that it's okay and it's safe to take the next step because we built that trust. And I think with apathy, what I've seen is that when I say two sides of the coin, I think sometimes salespeople, you can get to a point with a sales process and you think this is going to happen or not. And the best salespeople are the ones who think about it as, I'm actually guiding somebody to something that's really great for them. I'm actually providing value in a way that only we can do, that we are unique, and that I know it's going to help them. And when we think about it in terms like that, that becomes a different conversation. And that becomes a different sales process. And I think that's why it's so important to think about that customer journey, because that's a different conversation. That's like understanding, when we say risk, what does that mean? That means that somebody might be risking their job, might be risking finance. There's emotional risk. There's, am I going to look good or is this going to make me look bad? All of those things that play into that, those are real emotions and those are real people experiencing that. And I think if we can guide them and say, you know what? I believe you know what to do because this is what I'm seeing. This is what I understand. Tell me more. Tell me more about your real experience. And then I will share how this can assist that. I think the whole idea of understanding the entire journey also gives salespeople more tools in their toolkit, because then they can say, I know about this. What happens later in the journey? Let me tell you about that, instead of just aiming for the contract to be signed.
Right. Part of great customer experience is about reducing effort that customers have to make, right? To get answers, solve problems. We think about that a lot in context of customer service, right? The idea of, can I find answers to my questions on your website, or do I have to call the 800 number? But how can salespeople impact that?
Well, I think there are a couple things. One is, there are some organizations that treat, I think, everything like all roads lead to sales. And that puts salespeople in a really bad spot, in my opinion. And I'll give you an example. We might have talked about this at our event together, but one of the things that I like to look at when you're looking at a website and there's one phone number, where does it go? It usually goes to sales. And we don't provide another avenue for customers who are currently needing that, who are looking for that information. So then the sales team gets put in this position where they're basically being asked to provide service, or they have to tell the customer, you're wrong, customer, you called the wrong number. So I think salespeople looking for opportunities like that to say, hey, not all roads go back to sales. We need to talk about where things should go for the customer. I think that's a big area. And the other area that I think is really important is just knowing that when we talk about effort for customers, it can be little things, but thinking about things like a contract, right? Those are sometimes very complex. And what happens is the salesperson says, I'm going to send that to you. You look it over, sign it, whatever. And what the customer might need in that moment is guidance through that contract. And the guidance will do two things. One, it will reassure the customer. It will help them feel more confident. And it will probably get the contract signed faster. So there are all those different things where if we can look for those opportunities to be proactive about guidance, I think that's a huge opportunity for salespeople.
Yeah, if you can reduce that complexity or recognize it and walk them through it. I think of the example of door-to-door solar salespeople, and it's always fascinating to me. I see them all the time. For some reason, they really want our house to get solar, which I'm not against, but I'm just against the idea of somebody shows up at your front door and they literally have this like 10-page contract they expect you're going to sign like 8 minutes later.
Yeah, it's the same thing with what happens sometimes with technology, right? Like, the joke about getting a cell phone, how you used to walk in and they would be like, well, we've got this plan, which is 2 minutes on Tuesdays and 4 minutes, you know, and then we've got this one. And finally, I think customers just had enough. And a couple organizations actually started investing in customer experience. Sprint was one of them. They had some amazing results because customers appreciated that, you know what, let's make it simpler. Let's make sure people are trained better. Let's make sure that we're communicating in a way that's super clear. And every single organization I've ever worked with, one of the issues is communication. How do we communicate with customers? How do we communicate with employees? And if we can make that simpler, if we can reduce effort there, it usually makes everything else better.
Oh, we could do a whole different episode just on that, on understanding customer communication styles and how that's different. It might be the same or it might be different than yours, and your ability to recognize that and adapt to it. We'll have a whole behavior styles discussion another day. You alluded to this a little bit before, but I wanted to ask you more overtly. You said in the presentation that I saw that reassurance is one of the best gifts that you can give customers. Can you give an example or a story that might bring that idea to life?
Sure. When we think about, again, customers in their real lives, they're trying to do something. They're trying to just get something done with us. And sometimes what happens is they get to that point where they're ready. They're like, okay, I'm going to click buy. I'm going to sign the contract. And there are studies that show that people start experiencing buyer's remorse within 48 hours, or if it's a longer term contract, within the first 90 days is very important, right? We have to provide that reassurance because they're starting to wonder, did I make the right decision? And so if we can provide reassurance along the way, we can actually help boost their confidence. And if we can do it with a little humor or delight, even better. And I think the example I shared was, you know, this is why we have those messages on websites that say, once you've clicked this button, don't keep clicking it, right? Like, stop clicking. But we all did that because we were like, did it work? Did it work? Did it work? And that's an area where I think if you look for those moments where somebody could question, okay, did somebody receive this? Did they get what I was talking about? Am I going to get that package on time? Any of those questions that come up, proactively reassuring customers will help them feel more confident, will reduce your service calls because they're not going to call to see if that package is arriving. If they get that proactive communication and all sorts of other things. And several years ago, Halloween was coming up. My little guy wanted to be a ninja. I was trying to find the right ninja outfit. And I found it on this site I'd never heard of before. And it was a Halloween costume site. And I was a little nervous because it was shipping and it was a little close. And I clicked buy and they sent me the traditional, you'd think, like it looked in my inbox like a normal confirmation email. But when I opened it up, it was a video of the people in the warehouse going through saying, we're so excited. We're packaging up your kid's costume. We can't wait for Halloween either. We know it's important to get on time. And this is what you can expect from us. And so the video wasn't personalized, even though it felt that way, but the information in the email was. And it was just this little bit of reassurance that I still remember because I was a stressed out mom. And I think the more we can get to that level of proactivity and thinking through the questions people might have and those emotions that they have around what makes people anxious, if we can reassure them before they get to that level of anxiety where they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to shop here again, or I need to call service, I need to have somebody reassure me. That's what being proactive can do.
That's a great litmus test for pretty much everything we've been talking about is what are those points that cause anxiety, whether it's little or extreme, and what can you do to get out in front of those? And again, not put out the fire when it happens, but get out in front of it and prevent it to begin with.
Absolutely. One of the things that I like to think about is, you know, we know that we all use different tech stacks and everything. And one of ours we realized was sending things to people's spam folders. So we started getting those messages, right? Where is it? How can we get that? So now when we send it through that tool, we just send an automatic email that says, hey, it might get stuck in your spam folder. Here's how you look for it. Simple, but it shows the client that, you know what, we did it when we said we were going to, which is reassurance, and we're going to help you in what could be a hiccup on your side. So I think that's the type of thing any organization can look for those moments and try to address them.
Yeah. Any other small things that sales teams can think about that can really boost the customer experience in really tangible ways?
Yeah, we use something called a CX punch list, which is based on when you're going through construction and you have that list of all those things that you want to make sure are done at the end. And really, the idea is sometimes those little things, we relegate them to the someday or someone else pile. And by keeping it in a list that you're just addressing them one by one, you can actually get a lot done and customers will thank you because sometimes those little things are preventing them from achieving their goal or completing a task. So that's how you need to prioritize things. What is preventing a customer from achieving a goal or completing a task? And then what is just not working on either side, the customer or the employee side? A lot of salespeople that I talk to say that, you know what? We know that Jimmy is the best. He's the best sales guy. People love him. And I always say, well, what is Jimmy doing? And they say, well, Jimmy's just Jimmy, right? Jimmy's just great. And then Jimmy leaves and he's left with all this great information. And so what salespeople can do is look for best practices and document them as part of the customer journey. Because I bet if you interview Jimmy's customers, they will tell you things like, you know what? He reassured me. He was proactive. He contacted me within a day rather than 4 days, which might be the standard. So look for those kind of things and turn those into best practices so that when Jimmy leaves, because we all do, then you have that part of the customer journey kind of locked in the way that you really want to.
Yes, documenting those best ofs, you know, the people that are really stellar at it. Because you're right, everybody's going to move on to other things eventually, right? And that's a huge vacuum of institutional knowledge that can really cost you if it walks out the door, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but it's also customer trust, right? If a lot of people trust Jimmy and then Jimmy's not there one day, they are going to feel like that was him. That wasn't the brand. And so we need to really make sure that when we look at the customer journey, we're thinking about it as consistent across, because that will help everybody trust that it's the brand, it's the organization, it's not just one person.
Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed and, as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.